It is a great pleasure for me to have on the telephone Sanford Horwitt. You may not know that name, but if you buy his book, Conversations with Abner Mikva, you will be inspired. You will kind of be, I think, disgusted with the current state of American politics, because Abner Mikva was a giant of American politics. Mr. Horvitt, are you on the phone?
I am, Rick. I'm pleased to be with you tonight.
I am, too. This is some book. I got to tell you, its title is Conversations with Abner Mikva, Final Reflections on Chicago Politics, Democracy's Future, and a Life of Public Service. You know, I know that I've heard people have said, well, it's like a Tuesdays with Maury kind of thing. It is so much more than that. That's a sort of a slightly admirable book, Tuesdays with Maury by Mitch Albom. But this is so much more. When you decided, can I call you Sandy or do you prefer Sanford?
Sandy is great.
Sandy. Yeah, I thought I got that sense from reading about your relationship with... I knew Mr. Mikva pretty well. My father knew him incredibly well. You two first met in about 1974, but when you decided to do this book, it was... I have to think that you were working out some things in your own life, too, were you?
Well, I reached the point, even though I was a generation younger
sure.
than Ab Mikva, where I was starting to reflect on what I had learned in politics, and we had gotten into a period that was a pretty tough, not very inspiring time, even when we had an otherwise inspiring president, Barack Obama, in the White House.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I knew that Ab was not in great health. And so one day I came to Chicago, where I used to live, and I went to see him on North Lake Shore Drive in his retirement apartment with his wife, Zoe, who just recently passed away just several weeks ago at 90 years old.
Mm.
And I said to Ab, what do you think about getting together maybe once a month and talking about your thoughts on the country now and then and getting older and facing perhaps the end at some point, kind of the waterfront.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know what he was going to say, and his first words...
Absolutely is what he said.
Absolutely, you're exactly right. It was one word. It wasn't even
more. Well, you write in here that you did go up to the retirement high-rise on North Lake Shore Drive. Which one was it? Was it the Admiral or...
Well, when I started, it was the Hallmark.
Oh, sure.
Around 3,000, North Lake Shore,
sure.
Just a little south of Belmont.
It's interesting here, Sandy. You write, after an hour or so of chit-chat, I finally forced myself to ask him whether he might be interested in having a series of conversations. Why did you feel that way? I suppose you didn't want to imply like, hey, Ab, it's getting late in your life, but why did you have to force yourself, do you think?
Well, because I think I was a little concerned about him saying no, and I would have felt badly about it.
Yeah.
I would have maybe taken it personally that there was some rejection. It was silly on my part, really. And as soon as he said, absolutely, I'd love to do it, it all, of course, made perfect sense, and that was the enthusiastic, optimistic, very generous Ab Mikva that I had gotten to know beginning, as you said, Rick, in 1974.
Yeah, you said I met Abner Mikva. I'm going to, Sandy, as we go through this, because you're going to be on for 45 minutes, read, sentences here and there, and then we can just expand on that. Because I remember this. I met Abner Mikva in the winter of 1974. He was gearing up for another congressional race in a Republican-leaning district in the North Shore suburbs. He had been kind of gerrymandered out of the district where he had been elected successfully a number of times, yes?
Yes, that's exactly right. And he is really one of the very rare members of Congress, I think, in modern American history, who served in two very different political districts.
Yeah, no kidding.
When he represented the old second congressional district on the south side, from Hyde Park all the way to the east side and then down to the state line, that was a lopsidedly Democratic district.
No question.
when he lost that district through reapportionment, it was carved up, and he was not one of the machine boys by any means.
No, he sure.
And no one was going to do him.
You can say that again. You could actually pepper this conversation with that line. No, he was not one of the machine boys.
Right.
But I have a vague memory that I was in my early 20s then, and he was a great friend of my dad's, and so I paid, more attention than I would normally to politics in my early 20s. But I was kind of flabbergasted that he won that race. Were you too? You were intimately involved in that.
Yes, so he went up to the North Shore. It was a newly created district. It was then called the 10th Congressional District. And the first time he tried in 1972,
right.
Which was a bad year for Democrats, George McGovern, the Democratic presidential candidate, lost in a landslide to Richard Nixon.
Yes.
And Ab Mikva ran a pretty close race, but he lost. And I was not involved in that that race.
Right.
But 2 years later, he was going to give it one more try. And that is the Watergate year. It turned out to be a very good year for Democrats nationally. And that was the first of three consecutive victories that Ab Mikva had, each of them by less than one percentage point.
God, good Lord. You write in the book, and one of the things I really, really liked about this book, Sandy Horwitt, is it is not simply a sort of transcription of conversations you had. There is incredible context in here, and it is also a virtual kind of mini biography of you, too, which I really, really enjoyed. You write here, for instance, I began volunteering his campaign a few hours a week, and by the summer it was my full-time job. At the time you were teaching at what we always conventionally call Circle Campus, which was Circle then, but you wanted to be doing something political. Why did you want to be doing something political, Sandy?
Because that's really more who I was, and I really was not an academic. And a couple of professors at Northwestern, where I did both my undergraduate and graduate work, really influenced me. I thought the world of them, and I followed in their academic footsteps. But that really wasn't me. And when I was out for 1 year out of Chicago during that stretch of being a student, I went to San Francisco State College. And there, somewhat ironically, because he's such a great Chicagoan, is where I finally got to know who Saul Alinsky was.
Yeah, I want to talk. You do a wonderful job. Alinsky was another great friend of my father's and a great hero of mine. You do a remarkable job later in the book with him. One of the we got to take a break, but you're going to be on for another half hour. Sanford is the book jacket spelling. Sanford Horwitt, Horwitt, Conversations with Abner Mikva, Final Reflections on Chicago Politics, Democracy's Future, and a Life of Public Service. They are comprised of, but have a lot more than just monthly conversations that Sandy and Ab had over the last 3 years of his remarkable life. I was, when we come back after a short commercial break, Sandy, I want to talk about his early life, about which, frankly, I knew very little. And I think you're very honest and open about the relationships that both you and he had with your respective fathers. And if we could talk about that, I'll give you 2 or 3 minutes to prepare for that, okay?
Very good.
Wonderful, Sandy. We'll be right back. Thank you. Abner Mikva was a congressman, a federal judge, a White House counsel to Bill Clinton, a mentor, a serious mentor to Barack Obama. He was also a great friend of Sandy Horwitt Sanford on the book jacket, with whom he worked closely for many, many years, and who has done his mentor terribly proud with a book titled Conversations with Abner Mikva, Final Reflections on Chicago Politics, Democracy's Future, and a Life of Public Service, which is based not wholly on 3 years of monthly conversations they had before Mikva died. You do not consider this, Sandy, before we get into Ab's early life, you do not consider this a biography, and I will argue with you that any future biography of Abner Mikva will have to rely on this book profoundly.
Well, thank you for that compliment, Rick. I think of it more as a kind of a joint memoir.
Yeah.
And yeah. Much more about Ab Mikva. I'm the junior person in these conversations. But I think that our lives did have some similarities. You mentioned before the break.
Sure.
That we talked about our fathers. For Mikva, growing up in Milwaukee, mainly during the Depression years, he came from a really very tough home situation, about as tough as one could imagine.
Yeah.
His father lost his job at the very beginning of the Depression, around 1929, 1930. So for a good part of the 1930s, they had no income. They were on relief, as the word was used then. We used welfare
sure.
later, but it was called relief in Milwaukee during that period. Young Ab Mikva felt humiliated that in his circle of friends who were 8, 10, 12 years old, that he thought he was the only one who was on relief and didn't have anything.
Yeah.
In addition to that, his parents had a terrible marriage. Ab thinks it was an arranged marriage in the old country, even though they actually got married when they came to the States from Ukraine. And his father hit his mother periodically, and it was still painful for Ab to even talk about it 75 years later when we got together.
You are so frank about so much in this chapter. I think it's the second chapter in the book. And let me just look and make sure. No, it's first chapter, From Rags to Respect. Where you write, Ab and I both did well academically, even though our family lives were not child-rearing models by today's standards. As a kid, I don't remember my parents ever reading a story to me. In writing this book, you couldn't have, I don't think, Sandy, and please tell me if I'm wrong, at the beginning of this process of interviewing Mr. Mikva and maybe your intention was not even to do a book. Maybe it was just to simply have these conversations transcribed. When did you decide, and it's a very emotional decision, to become part of the story?
Well, I thought of that pretty early, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
And as a writer yourself and a great writer, you'll appreciate this. I started right from the beginning after Ab said, absolutely, I'd love to get together every month or so and talk about the country then and now and so forth. And I tried to figure out almost instantly how this could work if it turned out to be a book.
Yeah.
And I wasn't positive, probably for the first year,
sure.
that this really could work as a book, and it could work as a conversation between the two of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had to. I mean, describe your relationship with, you were a speechwriter, you did a variety of things. Give me the quick resume before we go on to arguably the most famous one in the history of Chicago politics, of which Mikva was part. So when you worked for him, how long did you work for him and what did you do for him?
I worked for him for 5 years when he won in 1974 and went back to Washington from this northern suburban district. I was his speechwriter and worked on some legislative projects. The one in particular that I was the key legislative aide for was his work on gun control. He was the leader in Congress, both in the House and the Senate, for trying to do something about handgun violence in this country. This is now back in the mid-70s.
Yeah.
And I worked with him for the 5 years until the day he was confirmed by the U.S. Senate and became a federal judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit.
Mm. He also, and the way you related, and I think, you know, half the people who blurb the book say the line, too, that he wanted in 1948, he wanted to work in the campaigns of Adlai Stevenson and Paul Douglas, and he was walking around Hyde Park, and he went in the 8th Ward Democratic, regular Democratic organization storefront on Cottage Grove. And what happened in there, Sandy?
Well, just to give a touch of a background, you know, he grew up in Milwaukee,
right,
which was famous at the time for clean, good government. You know, practically the antithesis of what Chicago was known for.
And still known for, yeah.
And still known for. Well, the big political machine was a little different then.
Sure, you're right.
But corruption, you had to know somebody to get anything done. And Mikva was told, you know, when you go to Chicago and go to law school, you can forget about getting involved in politics because it's a whole different thing. But now he's at the University of Chicago Law School, 1948. He's a 22-year-old kid, recently married. And he sees that Paul Douglas is running for the U.S. Senate and Adlai Stevenson is running for governor. And these are two really intellectual Democrats running, just the more Wisconsin kind of guys.
Sure, absolutely.
Chicago guys.
Yeah.
And so he's walking home from law school one night, and he sees the posters of Douglas and Stevenson in this little storefront of the 8th Ward regular Democratic organization on, as you said, around 79th and Cottage Grove. And so he goes in, and on the front there was the name of the ward committeeman, Timothy O'Sullivan.
Which is almost too perfect a name for a ward committeeman, yeah.
Yeah, and so the secretary shows them into O'Sullivan's office, and Mikva says, "Hi, I'm Abner Mikva, and I'd like to volunteer in the Douglas and Stevenson campaigns." And O'Sullivan takes a big fat cigar out of his mouth and says, "We ain't got no jobs." And Mikva says, "Well, I don't want a job. I just want to volunteer in the campaigns." And O'Sullivan says, "Who sent you?" And Mikva says, "Nobody sent me." And O'Sullivan said, "We don't want nobody sent." And that was the beginning and end of the discussion with Ward Committeeman O'Sullivan. And that has become kind of legendary Chicago story. There's actually a book written by Professor Rakoff.
Milt Rakoff, sure.
You know, Milt Rakoff called, "We don't want nobody sent.
Oh, they're just too much. There are so many political figures moving in and out of this book. You know, you detail, which another portion of the book that fascinated me was his Mr. Mikva's encounter with the Film Review Board, which very few people in Chicago even know what that was. Could you detail that for a bit?
Yes.
I found that part fascinating.
Even as late as the 1950s and into the 60s, Chicago had a film review board. Now, other cities had a similar kind of operation to pass judgment on whether a movie could be shown at a theater in their city. Well, what made Chicago's really very distinctive was that all the members of the film review board were women.
Were these old women who had been like the wives of dead cops and stuff, right?
You know,
sort of.
They were widows and wives of either police or politicians in the city.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Unbelievable. We got to take another break. I am on the phone with Sanford, the on the book jacket, Sanford Horwitt, Horwitt, the author of Conversations with Abner Mikva, Final Reflections on Chicago Politics, Democracy's Future, and a Life of Public Service. It is for those of you who lament the current state of American politics and indeed local politics, since only, you know, a paltry number of you came out to vote in the last election here. This book will give you hope, because this was a giant. I don't know if people like Sandy in 30 seconds, people like Abner Mikva come around once in a generation, and I just hesitate to think that we're likely to see his like again.
Well, I think that there is a legacy, and the legacy, I think, can inspire the next democracy's next generation. The book is dedicated to democracy's next generation.
Good. We're going to come back after the news, and I want to talk about your baseball scholarship at Northwestern, because this book is a lot about you, too. And you, I don't know you. We have a wonderful mutual friend in Jim Epstein, but you're a fascinating guy, too. So we will carry on in that fashion. Welcome back. Sandy Horvitt is, that's H-O-R-W-I-T-T, the author of Conversations with Admiral McFaul, Final Reflections on Chicago Politics, Democracy's Future, and a Life of Public Service, has kindly agreed to stay on for the rest of this hour, because I just find this book, and I find you, Sandy, pretty fascinating. Near the end, we were talking about, end of last half hour, we were talking about how this book may help inspire people who are toying with politics, and I find many of, not just my contemporaries, but younger people just turned off by politics. You write near the end of the book, I was inspired by Ab Mikva when we met more than four decades ago, and I feel newly inspired by our conversations over the last 3 years of his life. Even at 90 years old, and with all those pills he had to take, his determination to make a difference, to fight for a more just society and country, was never compromised. That is my hope, that the young people reading this book, you know, who may never, you know, it makes me kind of sad, but I think given the you know, this new Twitter age and the way people, the sad numbers of voters who vote in elections, there may be people who have never heard of Abner Mikva, and I think that's a tragedy, don't you?
Yes, I do, because what he represents is, I think, the best of our democratic tradition. And there is this organization, which I should mention, this is a good place to do it.
Sure.
That Ab and his wife Zoe helped to create, along with about half a dozen of us, his former congressional staffers. It's called the Mikva Challenge.
Of course it is. I know it well, but please...
And, well, in 2014, President Obama awarded Ab the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And when he received it, as President Obama was standing behind Ab and draping the medal over his chest, the announcer off stage started listing all of his accomplishments. He served in the three branches of the federal government. He was chief judge of the appeals court,
right,
and so forth. But the last line was, and he has inspired the next generation to be engaged in as part of their civic duty.
Yeah.
And Ab is really was most proud of that generally, but more specifically of the Mikva Challenge. I was the founding president of the Mikva Challenge. I've been on the board for a number of years. This spring in Chicago on April 4th, I will be back in Chicago because we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Mikva Challenge.
Wow.
And Rick, you know, not many people in Chicago know this, but with each local election, whether it's an alt for the mayoral primary like the recent one or a presidential year, there are now literally thousands of high school students that are trained by the Mikva Challenge to work on election day at the polls. And this is not work about donuts and coffee.
Right.
This is the heavy lifting of making sure that the election goes off smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just one of a dozen programs that the Mikva Challenge has developed over the years to really engage young people in their formative years in the political and civic process. And Ab was rightfully proud. He said this was one of the last things we talked about. We talked about it periodically over the 3 years of our conversations, but we got to it in a more focused way toward the end of our conversations. And he said that it was the best thing that he and his wife Zoe had done with their lives, which is quite a statement given everything that he accomplished.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I've known a lot of Mikva Challenge. I've always referred to them as Mikva Challenge kids. Many of them are no longer kids, but it's a remarkable organization. You do a lovely job in the book too, Sandy, of detailing the chapter 6. when the Nazis came marching in. I find that even people of a certain age, that being my age, they have they forgot all about this thing. You know, Studs Terkel used to tell me that we suffer from a collective Alzheimer's, and all we're thinking about is things in the future, and that it is dangerous to forget the past. Can you talk a little about the famous, infamous Nazis' desire to come to Skokie?
Yes, this happened in 1977 mainly, mm-hmm. And it involved a small band of Nazis in Chicago,
yeah,
who were trying to get attention, and they picked Skokie mainly. At the time, Skokie not only had a significant Jewish population, it was a suburb then of about 70,000 people, and maybe a third were Jewish. But in addition to that, Skokie had the highest number of Holocaust survivors per capita of any town or city in the country.
Yep.
And so this was an attempt to be, provocative, mean-spirited, however you want to describe it. And at first, the village of Skokie was going to do what other jurisdictions around the country did when Nazis wanted to cause trouble by demonstrating. And they decided that they would allow them to do a demonstration for a half hour, but they would basically try to ignore them and not give them any reason to get press coverage. Well, that really was not very satisfying for many of the Holocaust survivors who had such vivid memories.
See, one of the, Sandy, if I can interrupt you for a second, what I remember distinctly about it, and I think that indeed something good may have come of all that, in that many of the Holocaust survivors did not talk about, they were not having, cake and coffee and talking about the Holocaust. That this, what this did, in a sense, was make these Holocaust survivors a more activist and forthcoming group, eventually, I think, leading to the founding of the Illinois Holocaust Museum.
Yes. So that's exactly right. Initially, though, while this was starting to unfold in 1977, it was the pain that so many of the survivors said that they were re-experiencing. And so Skokie then passed three ordinances to try to keep the Nazis from marching. They made a U-turn on their strategy. And one of the ordinances, for example, was to prohibit any group from wearing military-style uniforms that included a swastika. Well, as much as everybody, most well-intentioned people, despise what the swastika stands for, in this country we do have a First Amendment that protects even things that we don't like to hear, and even symbols like a swastika. So pretty much from the beginning, when Skokie passed these ordinances, I knew a lot about the First Amendment from my undergraduate work at Northwestern, and Ab was well known as a civil liberties attorney.
Oh, no question. Yeah.
Just parenthetically, Rick, I was listening to your earlier segment tonight about Mr. Kelly's coming back, which I think is just wonderful.
Yeah, no kidding.
And one of the performers at Mr. Kelly's in the late 50s and early 60s was someone that Ab represented when he wrote for Playboy magazine, and that's Lenny Bruce.
Sure.
And so Ab was very familiar, and Lenny Bruce, pushed the envelope when it came to the choice of language, so Ab was very familiar with the First Amendment issues when this situation in Skokie arose while he represented Skokie as a congressman.
Yeah. You are, I will tell you too, Sandy Horwitt, you are a very talented writer because the narrative drive of this book is really something. When I would read anything that Jim Epstein told me to read, and so I did. But when I began at the narrative drive here, there are chapters that are just that just totally stand out. I'm not even going to talk to you about your baseball career at Northwestern because I want to, after this commercial break. There's another line in here that just is one of my bugaboos, too. Well, in this segment, you write that a big part of the problem, as Abner Mikva saw it, is the soaring cost of political campaigns. That could not be a bigger issue for me on any single level. We're going to take a short break and come back, and I want to talk to you about Saul Alinsky, about Barack Obama, and a little bit more about you. Are you doing any book signings in Chicago?
I think I will be. I don't have a date to give you.
Let me know, because
57th Street Books would like to have me come.
I bet they would. And there are other places, too. It's really, in so many ways, Sandy, just a remarkable book. It is inspiring. And I think any, you know, Mikva Challenge alum will go crazy for this thing. We have to take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and I will close off this edition of After Hours. Welcome back. I have about six more minutes with Sandy Horwitt, the author of Conversations with Abner Mikva, Final Reflections on Chicago Politics, Democracy's Future, and A Life of Public Service. It is based on 3 months. It's based on a deep, deep friendship between Sandy and Ab Mikva, but also on monthly conversations they had over the last 3 years of Mr. Mikva's life. And something that will haunt me forever, Sandy, is I did not remember or did not know that Abner Mikva died on the 4th of July, because I've ever been haunted by the fact that Thomas Jefferson and John Adams both died on the 4th of July, too. It just... I don't know. I'm susceptible to things like that, I suppose.
Yes, and so am I. And yeah. I think if it's ever a fitting time to die, dying on the 4th of July was the time to do it.
Yeah, and for an American, a real American hero, you had written, and I'm going to get this book, I'll order it tomorrow, a book about a very interesting chapter here that begins with you talking about, it's not just, it's the Clinton White House and Hillary's liberalism. And in the midst of talking about things like Paula Jones, the name Saul Alinsky comes up here because Abner Mikva told you that Hillary was a huge fan of Saul Alinsky. You write about Saul Alinsky. He was an authentic American original and an unusual mix of intellectual and street cred, a brilliant graduate student at the famed sociology department at the University of Chicago, a well-read master of the Federalist Papers and the great books, an acquaintance of Chicago mobsters. My father knew him well and thought him a towering figure. Certainly you do, too.
Well, I got to know Alinsky as your father did, and I still think of him as a heroic figure.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just so ironic that Alinsky, long after he died in 1972,
mm-hmm.
but his legacy lived on, so that the reason Barack Obama came to Chicago initially was to become an Alinsky kind of community organizer on the South Side.
Yep.
And Hillary Clinton and I have at least one thing in common. While I was sitting in Evanston writing my PhD dissertation about Saul Alinsky's methods of social change, young Hillary Rodham from Park Ridge was sitting in Wellesley, Massachusetts, as a senior in college, writing her senior honors thesis on the exact same topic.
That is a small world. That's sort of spooky to me, frankly. That's kind of spooky to me. You and Mikva met former President Obama at the same time, roughly, did you not?
Yes, I met young Barack Obama, who had just served maybe his first year or so in the Illinois State Senate, that meeting we had arranged by my old friend who ran AFSCME in Illinois at the time, Henry Bear, in Henry's office, because he thought Barack and I had something in common, that we both wanted to start a nonprofit organization that would have that would advocate for various progressive issues. And so we spent a couple of hours at first meeting in Henry's office, and he was a very affable guy. I must say I did not see the future president of the United States. But that was probably my fault and no one else's.
Talk about, and as we end this, and again, ladies and gentlemen, you can get, we have just touched on the surface of the riches that are contained in Conversations with Abner Mikva. It's a remarkable document based on conversations between two friends at the end of the life of one of those. The introduction, the first line of the introduction of the book reads, Abner Mikva saw death coming, but not Donald Trump. The Mikva's influence on, and we're talking about people inspiring youngsters today, he had, I think, a profound influence on Obama, didn't he?
I think so. You know, Ab had served for 10 years in the state legislature.
Yep.
When they finally got to meet each other, and I say finally because Mikva heard about Obama as this star student at Harvard Law School when Mikva was the chief judge on the U.S. Appeals Court in Washington. But he was told that Obama didn't want a clerk for him. It was nothing personal, but he wanted to go back to Chicago right after law school. He didn't want a clerk for anybody,
yeah.
And he wanted to get involved in politics.
Mm.
And so Ab and Barack did not meet each other until Ab Mikva and his wife Zoe returned to Chicago in 1998.
Yeah.
And then they became very close friends. They lived near each other in Hyde Park.
Right.
They were both teaching law at the University of Chicago Law School, Obama constitutional law, Mikva the legislative process. And they had a lot of sessions together, including at the wonderful Veloy's cafeteria,
sure,
on 53rd, where,
yep,
Ab and I recreated some of those times he had with Barack.
Yeah. It just is a remarkable book. I mean, there's been a considerable amount of praise from it, including a preface forward by Senator Dick Durbin. It just, you must be proud, Sandy. I mean, it's a sort of, you know, I've written a lot of obituaries for the Tribune over the years, and in a sense for me they are like goodbye letters to old friends where you try to capture the essence of those people. But I think you've done that in this, and I feel a sense of pride when I'm able to pull that off, but this is vastly different, and I think you, I'll tell you, you should be proud.
Well, Rick, thank you very much. It's coming from you. It's a high, high compliment. And I hope people will have a similar reaction when they read it. And as I said, the book is dedicated to democracy's next generation.
Yeah.
And I really hope it does find an audience among younger Chicagoans and younger Americans anywhere.
Yeah, we've got a big election coming up in 3 weeks from Tuesday for the new mayor of the city of Chicago. I'm sure you've been watching that with some interest. Sandy, when you come in for any kind of book event, please let me know and come back on the air. It's a fascinating book, and it's increasingly revelatory to talk to you about it. So congratulations. Jim Epstein has good friends. I've only met a few of them, but I'm glad he introduced us. I really am.
Thank you very much.
My
Rick.
Pleasure.
I really
hope to meet you. I hope to meet you face to face one day. Thank you. It's a great, great book. The title again, Conversations with Abner Mikva. Go buy it, read it, and take it to heart and head.